Today I'm going to talk about the topic that is classically called off the derech, or more precisely, children who are no longer halachically observant. I'd like to speak about, number one, preventing it, and number two, dealing with it. For some of us, the question is, as we raise our children, how do we create the greatest likelihood that our children will remain observant? For some of us, the question is, how do we deal with children who may no longer be halachically observant? And regarding this second question, it's really a question for both parents and for us as a society. What does it say about our Torah society when so many kids grow up in from homes and become non-observant? So first, let's deal with the issue of how to create the greatest likelihood that our children will remain halachically observant. We can ask, how do I make sure that my children are going to follow in the path of the religious community that I am raised them in? But we can never be sure. There are no sure guarantees, but that doesn't mean that everything is left by chance. We do the best we can, and then we hope and we pray. Very often when I tell people that they should send their kids to the yeshiva day school, not to public school, I certainly will not say that kids who go to yeshiva day school will definitely be Shomer Shabbos when they grow up, or those that don't go to yeshiva day school will definitely not be Shomer Shabbos when they grow up. But I will say that there is a higher likelihood of a child remaining Shomer Shabbos if he or she attends yeshiva day school. Similarly, what I hope to discuss is how to create the greatest likelihood that children will remain halachically observant when they grow up. I'd like to divide the answer into three parts: parenting, Jewish education, and modeling behavior. The first is parenting, and I don't think I'm going to share any chidushim here. Good parenting means finding that balance between expressing clear expectations and flexibility. On the one hand, we all know that there is not a one-size-fits-all approach for our children. Rav Hirsch criticized Yitzchak for educating Yaakov and Esau the same way. Some children don't fit into a box. Especially in some more right-wing communities, kids who have an interest in art, literature, and music were shunned. But we must find a place for them in the community. But we shouldn't let flexibility cloud the need for clear expectations, whatever you feel those expectations should be. And obviously, that's a how-to-parent issue. But it's an important one, because many kids who grew up and left Orthodoxy said it was because they really didn't receive direction at home, or because they were made to feel bad because they didn't fit into their parents' mold. So the second part is Jewish education. About 15 years ago, a book entitled Off the Derech was published by Farinak Margolis. And she spent 5 years doing research, conducting interviews, and surveying people as to why many people who had grown up in Orthodox households were no longer observant. She concluded that emotional issues, the extent to which a person feels positive or negative about observance, are the most influential of all contributing factors to someone leaving Judaism. And she writes, quote, "People's feelings about observance will be determined by whether or not observance was a source of joy for them, whether or not it enables them to feel safe, loved, accepted, and worthy, and whether or not it enabled them to self-actualize, express, and develop their particular character and needs. How observance was modeled plays an important part in this process as well. If parents and other authority figures love observance and feel joyful about it, the children will be more likely to maintain observance more than if parents felt only neutral towards it." End quote. Now, the second piece for her is belief, that children need to believe that the Torah is true, divinely given, and properly applied throughout the generations, and that it is a meaningful way of life, one that can be best achieved through the mitzvot. And the third piece for her is the ability to implement those feelings and beliefs. This requires discipline and knowledge to do these things, and a spiritual community in which to do them. It therefore seems to reason, and this is probably an obvious point, that we increase the likelihood that our children will observe halacha when they leave our homes if we educate our children in meaningful mitzvah observance with joy. Now, what that means is that first, we encourage both action and meaning. We need both, because Judaism is a religion of action, of mitzvot. What distinguishes us from other people is our observance of mitzvot, meaning without mitzvos is actually meaningless. At the same time, mitzvah observance without meaning is literally meaningless. There's value, but without meaning, it's difficult for the mitzvah to stick. Now, on the one hand, we need to instill in our children what Rav Lichtenstein has written about, that we observe mitzvos as a commanded being. We should feel that we are being commanded. And obviously, that's very difficult in today's zeitgeist of promoting the self and self-actualization and doing things because we feel it's the right thing to do as opposed to us being commanded. But on the one hand, we need to convey to our children that to observe mitzvot is to do so as a commanded being. And at the same time, we need to explain the meaning of relevance of what we are doing. So it's both sides of it. On the one hand, in today's world where the focus is on the self and self-actualization, so we want to try to be personally connected to the mitzvot and try to have our children find personal connection to what they do. At the same time, we have to convey to them that the Torah's perspective is that we do mitzvot as a commanded act. We need to share with our children what our observance, our prayer, and our faith mean to us. Personal connection should flow organically out of personal interaction with our text, our prayers, and our mitzvot. Rav Aaron Lapiansky, a Rosh Yeshiva in Silver Spring, wrote, "The lesson a child learns when seeing his or her mother shedding a tear while lighting Shabbos candles goes much farther than a lesson in philosophy." Now, it is natural that our children will have questions, and we must not stifle the questions. They will ask, "Why did God create me? Why must we keep Shabbos? If God is so loving, why is there so much suffering?" And we must struggle with these questions with our children and not stifle our children. And this is what I meant when I said educating our children in meaningful mitzvah observance. But I also said that it must be meaningful observance with joy. I think that is our understanding of the first paragraph of Kriyat Shema. The Mishnah and Brachos understands that the first paragraph of Kriyat Shema is all about Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemayim, accepting HaKadosh Baruch Hu as our King with a yoke, with an ol, with a yoke like a beast of burden. We must feel like a commanded being. And yet, we say in the first paragraph of Kriyat Shema, V'yahavtzas Hashem Elokecha, we must love God. We accept being a commanded being with love and with joy. We say Nasa V'nishma every day with joy. We believe that mitzvot are great gifts from God, full of meaning that can enrich our lives if we allow them to. We joyfully do that which we are commanded to do because it is meaningful to us, making our Shabbos, holidays, tefillos, and Jewish rituals relevant, meaningful, exciting. This is what it means to meaningful observe halacha with joy. Shabbos zmiros, for example, which may seem like not such a big deal, they actually are a big deal, because they can bring joy to our Jewish rituals. And creating associations of mitzvah observance with joy is critical in keeping people connected. Rav Hertner expressed very beautifully that we must inculcate to the child that he or she is a prince and that his or her identity is intrinsically tied to being Jewish. The key to this second stage of Jewish education is that there must be simchas hachaim while doing mitzvot meaningfully, and fear of sin should not cause stress. And there is a third ingredient to maximizing our chances of keeping our children from leaving religion. And that is, and again, it's probably an obvious point, but it's something you read about in all the books that discuss the kids who have left Orthodoxy. It's a lack of consistency by the parents. Children are turned off by inconsistency. They are turned off by having the level of observance different inside and outside the home. They are turned off by parents who preach honesty but are not honest. Now listen, nobody is perfect. But for example, children are turned on or off to the shul experience by how their parents behave. Children are turned on or off to brachos and birkas hamazon by how they see their parents recite brachos, including birkas hamazon. The Al-Sheikh comments on the pasuk in Shema, V'dibartabam, that parents must speak about, they must teach children that which parents love. Because first we say, V'yahavtzas Hashem Elokecha, we must love God, and only then V'dibartabam. Then we transmit this love to our children. When parents create a happy home, then the child will most likely want that as well. we want to educate our children in meaningful mitzvah observance with joy, the best way of achieving that is for us to engage in meaningful mitzvah observance with joy. I think it's a mistake to think that if we feel blah about observance and we are still observant, then our kids will feel blah about observance and they will also be observant. I don't believe that to be the case. Maybe we've been habituated to observe certain mitzvahs, but if we don't feel this sense of excitement and we don't convey that sense of excitement to our children, if our kids are not inspired by what we do, they will not necessarily follow in our footsteps. And of course, it goes without saying that we can do all this. We can parent effectively, finding that balance between providing clear messages of our values balanced with flexibility. We can educate our children to observe mitzvot meaningfully with joy, and we can model this behavior. But we need to realize that we may do everything right, and our children will still not follow in our derech. And that's why we also need to pray. Now, how do we deal with our children if they go off and when they go off, or if some children go off the derech? Now, before we attempt to provide a path for parents whose children are no longer observant, I think we need to acknowledge that there are often feelings of guilt or failure on the part of parents whose children are no longer observant, notwithstanding the fact that the reality is that often we can do everything right and our children still can decide not to remain observant. And then there is the broader question of what this phenomenon says about a broader society. How can it be that there are so many people who have gone off the derech after all the signs that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is true and the Torah is true? How can someone not believe? So of course one approach is to blame. Blame the parents, or blame the children. Assert that anyone who doesn't believe in God or practice Judaism is someone who has given into his or her Yetzer Hara or his or her hedonistic tendencies. The Rambam, in a slightly different point but maybe related to this, writes that someone who doesn't believe one of the 13 principles of faith is a heretic. And obviously it's not a good thing, you don't want to be called a heretic. But what if he tried to believe it then and then he doesn't? What can you do about it? You're still a heretic, presumably. That's a simple understanding of the Rambam. Rav Elchanan Wasserman, a Gadol HaDor in pre-war Europe, expands on this point in Dugmaot Libiurei Agadot al Derech HaPshat when he writes, quote, "It must be understood how there can be a mitzvah to believe. Regarding mitzvahs pertaining to the limbs, there could be a mitzvah to perform this or refrain from doing that, for that is in man's control, depending upon his will to act or to refrain from acting. However, belief in God and his Torah come on their own, so that either way, if one has this faith, there is no need to command him to believe. And if, God forbid, faith has been cut off from his heart, he cannot attain it. He would appear to be completely coerced in this matter, for his heart has compelled him. We see, however, from the laws of the Torah that the sin of heresy is very severe, more severe than serving idols. For an idolater must be judged in a court with witnesses and a warning, whereas heretics in all places and at all times are thrust down into a pit and not rescued. The fundamentals of faith in and of themselves are simple and compelling for any person who is not a fool, it being impossible to doubt their truth. This is true, provided that a person not be bribed, that is, that he be free of this worldly lusts and desires. Thus, heresy is not rooted in a breakdown of reason in and of itself, but in a person's desire to satisfy his lusts, which distort and blind his reason. We may now understand the Torah's admonition, and you shall not seek after your own heart. This refers to heresy. That is to say, a person is admonished to suppress and subject his desires in order that his reason be free from the distortions they cause, so that he may recognize the truth. Heresy has no place in man's reason, but rather in his desires and lusts. Unquote. Now there is something very comforting about this approach, which is, the Torah is true, and anyone who works hard enough will see the light of Torah, and those who went off the derech obviously didn't try hard enough. Now the problem, potentially, with this approach is that maybe there are good people, there are normal people who have gone off the derech. You know, until 2005, discussions of people leaving Judaism were mostly focused on discussions with parents, teachers, rabbis, and therapists of those who have gone off the derech. how to deal with the crisis. However, starting from 2005, literature on the topic was written from the perspective of those who left Judaism themselves. Books like Unchosen, Hidden Lives of Hasidic Rebels, Foreskins Lament, The Rabbi's Daughter Unorthodox, The Scandalous Rejection of My Hasidic Roots, and All Who Go Do Not Return, a memoir. These books gave readers an inner look at the complicated decisions that people make before leaving Judaism, and these books humanized those who left the fold. There's a podcast called 1840 by Rabbi David Beshevkin, and he addresses sensitive issues in Judaism, and he addressed the off-the-derech crisis, and he interviewed people who have gone off the derech, like Shulam Dean and someone named Philo Judaeus. Now, Shulam Dean is an author who was a former Skver Chassid, who wrote All Who Do Not Return. He seems like a nice and thoughtful individual. And Philo Judaeus is an alias for someone who was formerly observant, and now he runs a From OTD Facebook group, and he seems also like a nice and thoughtful person. I'm sure there are many people who are thoughtful, good, moral people who for some reason left Judaism. Now, if we take the view that we're doing everything right and these people left Orthodoxy are good people, went to Yeshiva Day School, and who learned the same Torah as us, and still they do not believe in God or they do not believe in the Torah, then does that mean that Torah is not compelling? That maybe it's not true? And that thought can be very frightening. That's why for many of us, we'd rather say that those who left Judaism have something seriously deficient, rather than say that the Torah is not compelling. But the truth is, I don't believe that we need to take either position, that either the Torah is evident to all good people, or that the belief in God is not compelling. I think that there's a middle view, namely the fact that not everyone believes in Torah. The fact that people leave religion is not a reflection on the fact that the Torah is flawed, or that those who leave the religion are just bad people. I think it's a reflection of gullus, of us living in an unredeemed world. One of the consequences of an imperfect world is a lack of complete observance and belief in the Torah by all Jews. In fact, leaving religion, while tragic, is not a 21st century phenomenon. Just think about the East European dropout rate in the 19th century to the Haskalah, Bundism, Socialism, and Secular Zionism. Think about how many Jews left religion when reaching the shores of the United States at the end of the 19th and the beginning of the 20th centuries. I think we may actually be doing better than those time periods in terms of Jews leaving Orthodoxy. Unfortunately, we have never experienced full retention of Jewish observance, no matter what we've done. Now, different people have different reasons why they believe in God. Some people find God through nature. The complexity and the efficiency of the natural world is so miraculous that it must come from God. And the Big Bang Theory, the fact that science can account for everything that was created except for the initial Big Bang, which must have occurred supernaturally. Some people find God in history. The fact that we are a consistently persecuted nation that survives and thrives as a strengthened and influential nation is nothing short of miraculous. The creation of the State of Israel following the Holocaust and the Six-Day War victory is nothing short of miraculous. The fact that the Torah predicts the exile and return, the land will remain desolate in exile, anti-Semitism, and that the Jewish nation will be a small nation as a blessing to the world, all of these things are nothing short of miraculous. Some people find the Kuzari's argument compelling, that we are the only religion to claim divine revelation to millions of people, and we are not a gullible nation, and there is no record of someone convincing a nation about a Sinaitic revelation. Some people find the beauty and the meaningfulness of Torah in their everyday lives as compelling, how Orthodox communities, which are more religiously demanding on our lives, are surviving and thriving. Some people find God in the observance of their rebbeim. For example, Rav Lichtenstein wrote, no doubt Rav Aaron Soloveitchik and Rav Yitzchak Huttner are aware of these difficulties referring to religious problems. Either they have answers to these problems, or they do not feel these problems are severe enough to bring essential doubt to Torah. Rav Lichtenstein believed in Rav Aaron Soloveitchik and Rav Huttner, and therefore he believed in God and the Torah they taught. Some people will find God in their everyday lives, as Rav Lichtenstein wrote. The greatest source of faith, however, has been the Ribbono Shalom himself. However, Rav Lichtenstein concedes that this argument is circular. And I can tell someone who is struggling with faith to pray to God to help him find his faith, and we can hope that something clicks. But it doesn't always click. Some people have left religion because of traumatic experiences leaving someone feeling alienated. The Maharal writes that Chilul Hashem is always based on what Talmidei Chachamim do. And this is based on the Gemara in Yoma, which places a higher burden on Talmidei Chachamim than average people in creating a Chilul Hashem. And the Gemara states specifically with respect to Talmidei Chachamim, Misha Kore Vishone Meshamesh Talmidei Chachamim, Ve'ein Maso Matano Be'emuna Ve'ein Dibur Benachas Imabrios, Mahabrios Omer Solav. And someone who reads the Torah and learns Mishnah and serves Torah scholars, but his business practices are not done faithfully, and he does not speak pleasantly with other people, what do people say about him? Oy lo liploni shalama Torah. Oy lo la'aviv shalim do Torah. Oy lo la'rabba shalim do Torah. Woe to so-and-so who studied Torah. Woe to his father who taught him Torah. Woe to his teacher who taught him Torah. Ploni shalama Torah ra'u kama makukalim ma'asav kama makhura'im derachav. So-and-so who studied Torah, see how destructive are his deeds and how ugly are his ways. Various scandals involving charismatic rabbinic figures that have come to light in the United States and in Israel have taken their toll on the confidence that Orthodox Jews worldwide have in religious leadership. Additionally, the fact that some rabbinic leaders attempt to defend or protect some of these rabbis has resulted in a general decrease in the dignity of the rabbin in the eyes of the Orthodox Jewish community. This reason is obviously something that perhaps could have been avoided, but unfortunately it's a reality in today's world. The Torah is divine, but people are not. And some people may leave religion because they simply don't want to observe mitzvos anymore. Religion is mocked constantly in this hedonistic age, and we live in a world of a search for personal meaning, and we don't want to be told what to do, and maybe some of those who left religion for this reason would have stayed if they were guided to observe the mitzvos with more passion and more joy. But like Rav Lichtenstein pointed out, some people just don't find the answers they seek. Some people just don't find any of the reasons to make us believe compelling. Yes, maybe kids had teachers who didn't answer questions, who answered them poorly, or forced the kids to think a certain way, or didn't adequately explain the difference between stringency and halacha, or conveyed that a person who sinned is lost. But some people just don't find the reason that connect us to Torah that compelling. In an interview with Rabbi David Beshefkin, Shulam Dean was asked if he tried to go from Hasidism to modern Orthodoxy, as opposed to simply leaving Orthodoxy altogether, and this is what he said, quote, "The first thing I considered was modern Orthodoxy. When the ultra-Orthodox world no longer worked for me, I looked to the modern Orthodox world assuming that they have the answers to all the big questions about Bible criticism and how science contradicts with Chazal, with the Talmudic sages. The first book I went to in the modern Orthodox world, it's the classic Lonely Man of Faith by Rav Soloveitchik. I thought that Lonely Man of Faith is probably going to give me the answers to the big questions for those who have a problem with faith in the modern world. The reality is the modern Orthodox world does not have the answers to those questions. Lonely Man of Faith is a beautiful work and it's a classic for a good reason. But it does not address the actual question. It's much more of an artful, much more artistic, poetic take on faith in the modern world that really doesn't speak to the elementary question of how do you reconcile everything we know to be true with everything that traditional Judaism says that is the opposite of that." So again, it is true that some people are motivated to leave religion because they are tempted by some behavior that Torah considers sinful, but not necessarily everyone. And Shulam Dean, for example, just didn't find his answers in the Orthodox world. Philo Judaeus told Rabbi David Beshefkin that he didn't want to leave the Orthodox community. He said, "We do not want to stop believing. We did not ask for this. And if we could, we'd prefer to stay in the Frum community. Leaving seems like a terrible option to us. But all of our other options seem even worse. So we have no real alternative except to leave. This is not something that we wanted." And this Philo Judaeus told Rabbi David Beshefkin, "We realized that this could be a very hard point for many people to accept, but we were brought up to realize that every normal, rational person, if they could only recognize and experience the beauty and depth of Torah and Yiddishkeit, would embrace Judaism." And however, he explains that, quote, The fact of the matter is that the arguments and evidence are not as straightforwardly obvious as many Kiruv rabbis make them out to be. Perhaps ultimately we really are mistaken about our conclusions and Judaism really is the one true religion. But it is still the case that smart, rational, intellectually honest people can come to different conclusions about this given the available evidence and arguments. And he says the following. He makes the following argument. He said, isn't there a concept that we need to use our bechira to believe? If belief was something that every rational person would necessarily and easily come to, then where would that leave much room for bechira? There's also a concept, according to many Rishonim Achronim, that emunah pshuta is a good thing, but that looking into the basis for our beliefs can be a very dangerous thing to do, even for otherwise normal people. So, I think that we need to accept that people leaving religion is an unfortunate reality of an unredeemed world. I think that just like we believe that evil exists in this unredeemed world, we try to fight evil, we try to fight whatever we can control, and then accept that which is beyond our control. I think similarly, that should be our approach to try to ensure religious retention of our children, our family members. We fight to ensure retention. We cannot shirk from our responsibility to ensure that our children, that our families, are Torah-observant Jews. We do whatever is within our control. And if it happens to be that a family member goes off the derech, we accept it, not necessarily as a failing on our part. Again, it doesn't excuse us from trying and keep on trying to bring that person back. We continue to do that which we can to try to bring our children closer. But we accept the results if, despite our efforts, this is the result. This is the result of an unredeemed world. We do not view those children as bad people. How are we to know why someone goes off the derech? It's very painful and very difficult for someone to leave the Orthodox community. And again, for some people, it could be because they were lazy. Could be because they just don't want to keep Shabbos, keep kosher. Life is easier when you're not Orthodox. But that might not be the case for everyone. For me, I simply find myself blessed that I feel that I have a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I don't look at contempt at someone who has left religion. Maybe it was a result of a traumatic experience that person had. For me, I am simply thankful that I did not go through that experience. Maybe that other person had some doubt which was never resolved, and I feel thankful that I feel so connected to God. I think this attitude is very important in how we relate to individuals who have left religion. Again, if you have children who have, let's say, left Orthodoxy, you certainly can have certain rules for them when they come to your house. You can certainly disagree with their views and their values, or some of their values. But who am I to judge why they did this? If they're good people, if they're bad people. And also with our family, we must always love our children regardless of whatever they do. That should be the default. Rabbi Menachem Penner, the Dean of Reitz, has a son who is gay, and he and his son were interviewed by Rabbi David Beshefkin. And in the course of the interview, Rabbi Penner said, I think there really are a lot of differences of approaching this issue on a community level and approaching it on a family level. I don't think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gifted you with a member of your family with the permission to cut off that member of the family to say, I'm done. I did it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's it. I'm not a parent anymore. I don't think that's a very easy thing to say. A child doesn't have another family down the road to turn to if the child is not part of your family. Gedalia, that's his son, has found a lot of comfort in the conservative world. He's a student now at JTS in Chazanos, and I think it's easier for a shul to say, I'm not sure if we can accommodate what you need, maybe there's a shul down the road that can, as opposed to a parent saying, I'm not sure if this home can accommodate. What if there's no other home down the road? The love, the acceptance, and the red lines must be different from a parent-child relationship than a communal relationship. In sum, I tried to outline the key to maximizing chances that our children remain within the religious fold. Parenting, the parenting piece of clear messaging with flexibility, the Jewish education piece of combining mitzvah observance to meaning and joy, plus exploring issues of faith in an open and honest dialogue, and consistency in what we practice and preach. Additionally, I tried to provide an approach for how to deal with the quote-unquote off-the-derech phenomenon on a personal level and on a broader societal level, recognizing that we are all different. Some of us connect to God in different ways, and some of us are good people who simply haven't found the way to connect yet, either because their desire for sin has led them astray, but not always. Sometimes they've experienced a traumatic event. Sometimes they've been exposed to bad Torah role models, and sometimes it just didn't click. And that's the reality of an unredeemed world. We don't have to spend our lives feeling guilty. We just have to spend our lives trying to inspire ourselves, trying to inspire others, and making sure that our love for those children who may have strayed remains firm, even as our commitment to our Torah values remains firm.